start. It's 10:15. There's a lot to do today. The first thing I want to do is thank very much the sponsors for today's shiur. We are really extremely grateful for the sponsorship that's coming in, and we would encourage people to continue, please, sponsoring the shiur. Be in touch with Mrs. Spivak, and she is very happy to receive that sponsorship. Obviously, the shiurim are continuing for now on Zoom. Imiyat Hashem, we'll all be together again in person at some stage, but until then, we need to continue to support the shiurim like that. So today I'm very delighted to announce that there are three sponsors for today's shiur. The shiur is sponsored by Joe Bloomberg. Thank you, Joe, in loving memory and for an aliyah and a shama of his dear mother, Anita Bloomberg, Chana Gittel Bas Yosef, Aleha HaShalom. Today, the 6th of Elul, is the day that he is finishing saying Kaddish for her of his 11 months, and therefore we thank Joe very much for the sponsorship. It should be an aliyah, Imiyat Hashem, for her neshama, and that he finished saying Kaddish today. That's the first sponsorship. The second is sponsored by Mark and Deborah Zohar. They've written here in appreciation and Hakarat HaTov to me for the Torah that I share with you every week. I'm very grateful to that. Thank you very much. Really appreciate those kind words. And also there is a third sponsorship today in memory of Fruma Bat Meir, whose Yortzeit was the 9th of Sivan. So thank you to all of those people who sent in that sponsorship. Really appreciate it. And again, we are happy to receive more and future sponsorship if you're able to do it. Now, you're probably getting a little bit tired by now of exotic animals. Don't worry, because today is the last of the series of four. 3 weeks ago we looked at swordfish. 2 weeks ago we looked at turkeys. Last week we looked at zebu, bison, buffalo, etc. Today, we're going to have a fun time today, I think. I think it's quite a fun shiur. We're going to look at locusts. And everything you wanted to know, or maybe didn't particularly want to know about locusts, but you're going to know anyway, we're going to deal with that today. Next week, for the next 3 weeks, what I'd like to do in the run-up to Rosh Hashanah is give a series on a topic that we've never talked about, quite remarkably, in all of the 181 shiurim, Baruch Hashem, that we've given on contemporary issues. We've never talked about the issue of women and mitzvot, specifically time-bound mitzvot, approaching Tishrei, where many of the mitzvot are time-bound, shofar, sukkah, lulav, and especially this year, when so many people will not be in shul. And there are all sorts of interesting shilas that are coming up of shofar. Women are very particular to hear shofar. We'll see next week exactly what the parameters of that are. What are people going to do this year? Should people blow for the shofar for themselves at home? Should men blow shofar for their wives at home? Should women blow shofar for their husbands at home? Should women blow shofar for themselves? What are the parameters of these mitzvahs that specifically women are not obligated in but often want to take part in? What is our attitude? Do we encourage it? Do we discourage it? Are we neutral on it? There's a lot to say on this. It's actually a much bigger topic, and I'd like to open that up over the next few weeks, coming into Tishrei, and after that we'll go further into other topics. But for today, we are still on locusts, or we're starting locusts. I'll just post the few more people have come on the chat, so I'll just post the file one more time for those people who are just on now. Probably, I would guess that very few people on this shiur today have eaten locusts. Full disclosure, I've never had the pleasure of eating locusts. I'm not proposing to anytime soon. Although, for reasons that we'll see soon, eating locusts is actually not such a halachic issue, according to many poskim, even for people who are Ashkenazim, who I again assume are many of the people on this shiur. If there's anyone who is a Yemenite or from Yemenite extraction, Taymanim, they may well have eaten locusts, and they may well do so for dinner with a bit of mashed potato and a couple of peas. I don't know exactly how that well works for the best. They do say, by the way, that locusts taste very much like the things that they last ate. I don't know if this is true or not, but if they last ate sesame plants, apparently they taste like sesame. If they last ate potatoes, they taste like French fries. So it's in that sense something, you know, they can taste of whatever you like, depending on what they ate. So let's talk a little bit about locusts. I've brought you a sheet which has lots of information, although today we should, as Be'ezrat Hashem, get through it. Let's start with a contemporary issue, which is that there is right now a terrible plague of locusts, which is affecting many communities in Africa. I brought you something from the BBC from a couple of weeks ago here. If you look here, East Africa is seeing its worst swarm of locusts in many decades. How can these ravenous pests be stopped? The locust invasion that swept over farms in rural Kenya from December 2019 has left farmers not only counting crop losses, but struggling with emerging environmental and health problems. The swarms have been the worst in Kenya for 70 years, and experts are concerned that swarms later in the year will be even larger, and they are keeping a track of this as we go along. Desert locusts, or, and this is an important species we're going to see now, forgive me if I pronounced it wrong, but I think it's Schistocerca or Schistocerca gregaria, have often been called the world's most devastating pest, and for good reasons. Swarms form when locust numbers increase and they become crowded. This causes a switch from a relatively harmless solitary phase to a gregarious, hence the name of the species there, the official gregaria name, sociable phase. Now, it's actually very interesting. I'll just fill you in on something in the terms of the zoology of the locust. The locust, normally speaking, is very placid. It does its own thing like any other fly or insect. It sits on a plant. It kind of minds its own business all on its own. Every now and then when locusts get together, they start jumping on each other and rubbing each other's legs and bodies. And this causes neural changes to be made in the locust. It's almost like a Jekyll and Hyde. It's fascinating that what started as really quite a placid, simple creature suddenly turns into an aggressive predator. The brain actually increases in size, the legs decrease in size, and it turns it and it changes color to a bright yellow color. You can see this yellow locust here. This is a locust in its aggressive swarming phase, if you like. And they actually turn into almost a different creature, and they swarm in their millions and billions. This causes a switch from a relatively harmless solitary phase to a gregarious social phase. In this phase, the insects are able to multiply 20-fold in 3 months and reach densities of 80 million per square kilometer. Each can consume 2 grams of vegetation a day. Combined, a swarm of 80 million can consume food equivalent to that eaten by 35,000 people a day. So they can consume 35,000 people's food every day. In 2020, locusts have swarmed in large numbers in dozens of countries, including Kenya, Ethiopia, Uganda, Somalia, Eritrea, India, Pakistan, Iran, Yemen, Oman, Saudi Arabia. When swarms affect several countries at once in very large numbers, it is known as a plague. And of course, that's how you and I probably first met locusts, not in person, but in the plagues. That locusts, of course, are the eighth of the 10 plagues. And the Torah is very specific as to quite how damaging and in many ways devastating the plague of locusts can be. And what's interesting about locusts is that one tiny change of the wind can bring a swarm of locusts that were heading in a safe direction as far as we're concerned and can change direction. And this swarm that's now going, let's say, westwards across Africa can suddenly go north and, God forbid, swarm all over Eretz Yisrael. And the devastation that that can cause to crops is absolutely immense. Let's have a look at the famous psukim. I've got to pull a few of them out about the plague of Arbeh, number 2. V'yavu Moshe v'Aaron el Paro v'yomru elav. They said to Paro, Ko amah Hashem elokei Yerim, ad matai ma'antim la'anois mipanai. How long are you going to refuse to send the people out? Shlach ami v'yadunim. Send my people out so they can serve me. In footnote, Moshe never says, let my people go. That's the secular take on the Egypt story. He says, let my people go so that they can serve me. Freedom is freedom to do something rather than freedom from something, but that's a separate schmooze for Pesach time. Ki ima ein atal shaleach, if you refuse again to send, etami, my people, hinini, maybe mahem, machar, arbe. I'm bringing arbe. Now, we're going to have a lot of words today for locusts. Arbeh is a generic word for locusts, obviously from the word rav, meaning swarms, multitudes of them. So I'm going to bring arbeh bigvulecha. They're going to cover the land. You won't even be able to see the land for these millions of locusts. They'll eat what's left from the plague of hail. They're going to eat the whole of all the trees, all the plants, all the fields. Umalu bachecha, they will fill up your houses. Bate kol avadecha, the houses of your servants. Bate kol Mitzrayim, the houses of all the Egyptians. And these important words. Asher lo ra'u avotecha va'avos avotecha miyom. None of your forefathers have ever seen anything like this. Miyom hiyosem al ha'adama ad hayom hazeh. From the very beginning of Egypt until today, there's never been a plague like this. It'll be the worst plague in history. Fine. So, of course, Paro refuses. The plague comes. And it does all of these terrible things, completely devastates Egypt. Just pick it up here in Yud Daled. V'yal ha'arbe al-kol ha'eret Mitzrayim. The locusts came from Egypt. V'yanach b'chol gvul Mitzrayim. They covered the whole of the border of Egypt. Kaved ma'od lefanav. Kaved ma'od, excuse me, extremely serious. And look at what it says now. Lefanav lo hayachein arbe kamohu. There'd never been locusts like it. The acharav lo yihyekein. And there'll never again be locusts like it. That's interesting wording. Because the Torah appears to predict that not only is this the worst plague ever, but it is the worst plague that there will ever be. Okay? We'll see in a minute the Sefer Yoel and how that all fits together, and it describes how devastating the plague of Arba was. And then at the end, Paro of course says, please take this death away. Vayasem alai raket ha-mavet hazeh. This is killing our country. Vayetem im Paro v'yeta al Hashem, Moshe davens to Hashem, v'yafoch Hashem ruach yam chazak ma'od. Originally the locusts were brought by a ruach kadim, an eastern wind. Now Moshe davens there should be a western wind. You see how the wind is so important with the locusts? It can change the direction of the locusts. They bring a west, God brings a west wind, vayisa et arbe v'yitakehu yama suf. And it thrusts them in to the Red Sea, and they drown in the Red Sea. Lo nishar arbe echad, there was not one locust left in the land. We'll see why that's important in a minute. B'chol gvul Mitzrayim. And of course, as you know, the Red Sea, Rashi talks about this, borders both the east and the west side of the Sinai Peninsula, and those locusts, this is exactly where the locusts swarm. And this actually is a very interesting point. The location of Eretz Yisrael is so on the edge in so many ways, and that's how it's meant to be. Eine al ha'ar, eine Hashem al ha'aret, mireshis ha'shana ad achris ha'shana. God is, if you like, looking, the hashkacha of, on this, on the land of Israel is different from other lands. Go a little bit to the north, and there's rain, there's so much rain, there's no problem. Go a little bit to the south and you're in the Sahara, you're in the total desert. We're just on the edge. We could be in the rain zone, like Turkey and Syria, we could be in the desert zone. It depends on the year, it depends on Hashem. So too with locusts. The area for the locust swarms are all the land to the south of us, about 1,000 miles from Israel to the south, is classic desert locust storm. From Saudi Arabia, through Yemen, through Africa, etc. To the north of us, there are no locusts. The locusts do not swarm. We're right on the edge. It could affect us, it could not affect us, depending on the hashkacha. And that's why, again, with locusts, just like with rain, it's mamash ala gvul, it's right on the edge. Fine. You're very familiar with the plague of locusts in the Torah, I'm quite sure of it. Rashi picks up, look at number four. Number three just talks about the directions of the wind. We've looked at that. Number four, Rashi picks up on this prediction. There will never be another plague like this in Egypt. So if you look here, in number four, the Achrav lo yiyekein, the Oyseh shehayib me Yoel. But 1 second, in the days of Yoel, there was a mass swarm plague of locusts that affected the whole region. And it says there, Shneimar, Kamo loy niye min ha'olam, that there'd never been one like it. Now that's obviously a contradiction. This seems to be the kind of thing that the Tanakh says about a plague of locusts. There'll never be anything like this. But here in Yoel, it says it's even worse than Mitzrayim. It says Rashi, no, you have to understand. Lamadnu she'aya kaved mishal Moshe. It was indeed worse than Moshe's plague. Ki osa shel Yoel, because the plague of Yoel haya al yidei minin harbe shel Shehayu Yachar. There were many plagues, there are many types of locusts, and well, this is important for us, going forwards, coming together. Arbe, Yelek, Chasil, Gezem, all of these different types of locusts that, like Gezem, it completely, you know, destroys the area. Aval Shel Moshe, Laya Elisha Min Echad. There was only one species with Moshe, Arbe, not the other ones. So there'll never be a swarm as bad as that with one species, but when multiple species join together, then that becomes that becomes even worse. And actually, I recommend to you, we don't have time today to go into the detail, I recommend to you these first two parakim of Sefer Yoel. If anyone is into 9-9 doing Tanakh Yomi, these came up just a few, about a week or so ago. These first two parakim in Yoel are all about locusts, and they are incredibly descriptive. Let me just pick, I brought you the Hebrew and the English here. Yoel starts off here, the following. God says to Yoel, tell this to the elders. Has the like of this happened in your days or the days of your fathers? Tell your children, tell your children's children, the next generation, the locust is coming. Okay? And these names, I'll just bring it out for you here. Yeter ha-gazam achal ha-arbeh. What the gazam leaves, the arbeh will eat. The yeter ha-arbeh achal ha-yalek. And what the arbeh leaves, the yalek. All these different types of locusts are going to destroy the land. And the crops will be completely destroyed. The ground was mourned, the new grain is ravaged, the wine is dried up, the oil has failed. And it goes to how the whole, all of the crops, people's livelihoods, people's whole year's wages will be destroyed. O priests wail, spend the night in sackcloth, do tshuva, etc., etc. Gather everyone together. So too, in chapter 2, the locusts are described like an army, like an invading army. Each one going forward, marching up the walls, over the barriers, into the windows, etc. They don't get hurt. They rush up the wall. They enter like thieves. And very famous psukim now. Just read the end of chapter 2 of Yoel. Vagam ata na'um Hashem shavu edai. Okay, Adai, return to me. V'chol bavchem ubetsom ubebechi ubemisfeid. Locusts are an impetus for tshuva. Kir'u levavchem ba'al bigdehem. That's very, very famous line. Tear your hearts rather than your clothes. V'shuvu el Hashem elokeichem. Return to God. Ki chanum v'rachum hu erech apayim rav chesed nicham al ara. God will reverse this terrible plague. And again, one change of the wind, and the whole thing goes away. Mi yodeya yashuv v'nicham v'hishir acharav bracha. You'll get bracha. Mincha v'nesach l'Hashem elokeichem. Kikush shofar. We'll get to that soon. Blow the shofar for Tzion. Kachutzam, make a fast day. Kiru atzara, call a stop for everybody. Isfu am kachu kahal kapsu zikeinim. Isfu olalim, the children, the elders, the yonkei shadayim, even those nursing children. Yetze chatan michedro v'kala michupata. There's some great famous one-liners. The chatan from his room, the kala from her chupa. When we talked about women in the army, this was a very important line. So in Sefer Yoel, there's a very, very vivid description of all of this, of the terrible nature of the locust. And you can see how that we don't really feel this way, mostly coming from Northern Europe and North America, but locusts are imprinted on the minds of people. And there have been many locust swarms and plagues in Eretz Israel, specifically over the last couple of hundred years. I brought you a list here of plagues that have come through Israel. Particular years to mention are here. Look, in 1845, it took 45 minutes for the locust to fly over Yerushalayim. And by the way, Yerushalayim was not very big then, so it doesn't take long to fly over Yerushalayim. But 45 minutes, this swarm. Yoel talks about like soot, like a black swarm of soot coming over the horizon. Another big year was 1915. This is an important year. There was the plague of the century. There was fasting all around the world. 30,000 people died in Eretz Israel from starvation. Interesting, like in parentheses, the Turkish rulers appointed Aaron Aronson of Zichron Yaakov to control the damage. He was an agronomist. Now, you know the story of Aaron Aronson. What did Aaron Aronson form? He formed the underground resistance group, Nili, okay, with his sister, Sarah Aronson. And, of course, this historically fascinatingly, this opportunity of Aaron Aronson to be sent by the Turkish, the Ottomans, all around the country to research how to stop this plague, this gave him the opportunity to actually record troop movements, look at army bases. He was able to do this and send this information to the British to help them win the First World War. And the plague of locusts, if you like, was the cover that he used in order to be able to go forward with Nili. He did it together with his colleague, Avshalom Feinberg. Anyone who knows the story of Nili will know that Avshalom Feinberg was killed murdered by Arabs just by the Gaza border, and nobody around that period, 1917-18, nobody knew where his body had been left. And of course, later on, after the Six-Day War, they found, when they took the area, the date palms had grown from the date pits that were in his pocket. He'd been eating dates when he was killed by the Arabs, and those date pits grew into date palms that marked the place of his body, and his body was recovered and reinterred from that. It's a fascinating side issue. But the 1915 plague was absolutely devastating. And even into more modern periods. Here, look, 1928, 1945, 1955, etc. Even in 2013, if anyone remembers, there was a swarm of locusts. There were locusts in Tel Aviv. Baruch Hashem, today, we have a lot of pesticides. We have a lot of spraying that we can do. But still, the locusts are a grave threat to the Jewish people. Now, the flip side, of course, of locusts is they're not just from the desert, they're also for your dessert. They are an excellent crunchy snack to eat after dinner. And the question is, how do we relate to them in these two different ways? The laws of Kashrus specifically talk about locusts in Shmini, not in Re'eh, interestingly. Why should you and I be bothered? So let me just start with an interesting ha'ara here. There may indeed be a fulfillment of a positive mitzvah that we're doing today on the shir that we may never have done before. Have a look at number 6. The Torah has a pasuk here, the end of all the laws of kashrus. La'havdil bein ha'tameh or bein ha'tar. There's a mitzvah to distinguish between the treif, the tameh, and the tar, and the kosher. Or bein ha'chaya ha'necheles, between those animals you can eat, and those animals you can't eat. Says the Rambam, number 7, mitzvah asei leida, it's a positive mitzvah just to know, hasimanim, all the signs, simavdinim behem, ben behemah v'chaya, like we saw last week, between behemoths and chayas, v'oif, and birds, like we saw 2 weeks ago, v'dagim, and fish, like we saw 3 weeks ago, v'chagavim, and locusts, shemutah la'afan, those that we're allowed to eat. It's a positive mitzvah to learn the differences between them. Bein she'ein mutal achalam, those that we're not allowed to eat. Between those we are and those we're not. She'ne'emar, v'hivjaltim bein ha'behema ha'tahara l'tameh or bein ha'of ha'tameh l'tahara. And it says also, l'havdil bein ha'tameh or bein ha'tahor. And therefore, it's not just a mitzvah to not eat treif locusts. That's a negative mitzvah, to not eat treif locusts. It's a positive mitzvah to learn the difference between the kosher ones and the treif ones. And therefore, here, number 8 in the Sefer HaMitzvahs, Mitzvah Kuf Nun Aleph, Mitzvah 151 is, Shetzivanu Livdok B'Simani Chagavim. Specifically with locusts, there is a positive mitzvah to check, to know how to check, and in fact, Rav Chaim Kanievsky wrote a whole Sefer called Karnei Chagav, the horns of the locust, and he writes there that he considers it, even though we don't eat locust Ashkenazim anyway today, he says it's a positive Torah mitzvah to learn the differences between treif and kosher locusts. So today we are all engaged, hinenei muchon u'mezumen, we're all engaged in that positive mitzvah right now. Even if you never propose to eat a locust in your life, you can at least say that we did this mitzvah this morning. Of course, Rav Chaim Kanievsky there's an interesting story that's told of Rav Chaim Kanievsky and the locust. You may be aware of this story. He was sitting in his house in Bnei Brak, and he was learning the Dapim in Chulin, in Samach Vav and Samach Hei, that deal with the kashrus of locusts, and he was having great difficulty getting exactly an understanding of what locusts they were talking about, and in flew a little grasshopper into his house, landed on the wall next to him, and sat right next to him as he was learning, as he was able to look at this grasshopper, and then it flew away, and he needed to learn some more. And another one flew in, and sat right there. That's the story how it goes, and later on when Rav Chaim was doing renovations on his house, and they said, we're just going to knock this wall down. He said, nope, don't touch that wall. That wall is the wall of the locust. That is the wall where that little grasshoppers and locusts are the same kind of thing. Some are kosher, some are not. He said, that was the wall where the locust sat, and that was a little nace, if you like, that happened to me. And therefore, he wrote this very important book, Karnei Chagav, on the back of that experience that he had with the locust. Okay, fine. Now, let's talk a little bit about the kashrus of locusts. Locusts were always eaten. When it says in the Torah, number 9, Lo Nishar Arbe Echad, that in the land of Egypt there was not one locust left, as opposed to the plague of the wild animals, where they were left stinking in the fields after the plague finished, here every locust went away, says Rashi, Af Hamaluchim Shemalchu Mehem, even those that they pickled. Because one of the upsides of a plague, I mean, there are very few upsides of a plague, but at least there's a lot of food around. There was a plague of locusts in Australia a couple of years ago, and the Australian government said, we're not going to call them locusts, we're going to call them sky prawns, and we're going to encourage everybody to catch them and eat them, and they are apparently very good pickled. And I brought you a couple of sources here in the footnotes, as to the Chazal talk a lot about pickling locusts, special barrels for pickling locusts that they have, and therefore they've always been seen very much as food. It's actually very healthy. Locusts are 62% protein and only 17% fat. So if you're interested in a calorie-controlled diet that includes a good source of protein, locusts may be for you. Clearly they've been eaten throughout the ages. So which ones are kosher and which ones are not? Let's have a look at this now. Source 10 is perhaps the first important source that we need to see on the kashrus of locusts. Number 10. Here are the three psukim in the Torah that deal with this issue. Chaf Aleph in Vayikra Yud Aleph. Ach, etzeh tochlu mikol sheret ha'of. Most of the flying creepy crawlies we're obviously not allowed to eat. But this you can eat, says the Torah. Ha'olech al arba. Everything that you has four legs, but ashelo kra'ayim, but it has an extra two legs. Now this word lo is written with an aleph and pronounced with a vav, so it sounds like it doesn't have them, or it does have them, we'll see soon what that means. It has an extra two legs, mima'al l'raglav, above its other legs. Okay. L'nater b'hem al ha'aretz. And it jumps with these two big legs. We'll see soon a big picture of a locust. Et eile mehem tochelu. These are the kinds of locusts that you can eat. These with the extra two legs. Et ha'arbe. Arbe, lumino, and its species. Ve'et ha'salam. And the locust salam and its species, leminehu. The etachargol begins with a chaf, remember that, leminehu. The etachagav, and also, chet, excuse me, begins with a chet. And etachagav, also, you can eat, leminehu. The chol sheret ta'of, but any other creepy crawling, asher lo arba raglaim, which only has the four legs, sheket hu lachet. That is sheket. And you may not eat it. That is disgusting. Only those species, and Rav Aryeh Kaplan describes them here just by colors. The red locust, the yellow locust, the spotted gray locust, and the white locust, and all their families, they are the ones that you are allowed to eat. Now, what's going on with this locust? You see this nice fellow here? So hopefully you can see the picture. Can you see the picture on the screen? Hopefully it comes up quite well. There are four regular legs at the front here. One, two, three. Oops, I didn't mean to make little lines on it. Sorry about that. There are four regular legs on the screen there. And then it has these two very powerful hind legs, big muscly hind legs here that it uses for jumping. That's exactly the point. The four forelegs and the two very strong hind legs that it uses for jumping. And that's what the Torah is talking about. The kra'ayim are the two very strong legs. Now, that's in the Torah. That's all it says in the Torah. In the Talmud, in the Gemara, and in fact, even before the Gemara, we have very clear evidence that the locusts were eaten in the Second Temple period. The earliest reference is actually in the Dead Sea Scrolls. One, I brought you in the footnote, one of the Dead Sea Scrolls refers to how they used to kill locusts. And they basically kill them either by putting them in boiling water, by putting them in a flame to fry them. That's how they killed locusts. We'll see soon. They don't need shechita. But in the Dead Sea Scrolls, it talks about that. For those of you who are aware of the New Testament and various different aspects of that, you will be aware that it records that John the Baptist ate locusts when he was in the desert. That's an obvious thing that you would eat when you're in the desert. So locusts were very much on the menu here. The Mishnah in Chulin talks about the signs for kosher locusts. Let's look together in number 11. There are basically five signs for locusts. Remember these, and then it'll help us understand. V'chagavim. So what are the signs for a chagav? Kol sheyeshlo, here's sign number one. Arba raglaim, has to have four legs. Okay, lots of insects have four legs. Arba knafayim, it has to have four wings. Vekar sulaim, it has to have these two very strong hind legs. Uknafav chofim et ruba, and its wings have to cover its most of its body. Okay? And Rabbi Yossi, adds, Rushmo Chagav. It has to be called Chagav. People have to call it the locust, as opposed to the grasshopper or the fly or something else. It has to have this name Chagav to it. So again, four signs. Four legs, four wings, two hind legs, wings cover the body, and it has to be called Chagav. The Tiferes Yisrael explains that these karsulaim are these two very strong legs, and here's our picture of the locust again. You see it has all of those signs. It has four legs, it has, well, you can't see all the four wings, but it has four wings, it has two very strong hind legs, and the wings here cover most of the body. This is a classic desert locust. The Gemara actually gives a few indications as to how to check your locusts are kosher. Number 13, the Gemara says, my ruboy. What does it mean the wings have to cover the majority? Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav Ruba, Rav Arko. It has to be most of the length. The Amrila, others say, no, Rav Hekefo, it has to be most of the circumference. Amar Rav Papa, and Rav Papa says, Hilkach, therefore the halacha is like both. We're stringent like both. Hilkach, Rav Arkoi, Uba'inan Rav Arko, Uba'inan Rav Hekefo. We need the wing to cover most of the length and most of the circumference. Okay, Shkoyach, we are machmer for both of those things, and clearly in Babel they owed locusts as well. What about baby locusts? Now, I brought you here, I'm not going to go through the whole thing now, but the life cycle of a locust is itself fascinating. For those of you who are British, who remember Johnny Morris, those of you who are Americans don't know what I'm talking about, but those of you who are British know who Johnny Morris was. I brought you a very sweet video link for it'll take you back to your childhood, a video by Johnny Morris of the life cycle of the locust. Basically the females lay eggs in the ground, the eggs hatch, and these little nymphs come out. The nymphs do not have wings. They only grow their wings later. They crawl out, and they kind of sit around for a while, and they go through various different stages, molting their skin again and again and again. These stages are called instars, and in the final instar, they have fully formed wings, they dry out, they take to the skies, and then they do their thing. So the Gemara here says, number 14, Ein lo, Tana Rabbanan, Ein lo achshav, if it doesn't yet have wings, va'atid ligdol, but it's going to grow wings, la'achazman, in after a while. Kagon hazachal, there's a certain locust which crawls around before it has its wings. That's most young locusts. Musa, that's fine. You can eat them in their pre-wing stage as well. And another halacha, Rabbi Yossi Omer, Asher lo kra'ayim. It says lo with an aleph, not just pronounced with a vav. Afal pi she'ein lo achshav, even though it doesn't yet even have the legs, the big legs, va'atid ligdol, and then later it'll grow them, la'achazman, that's good as well. Now actually, all locusts, as far as I'm aware, have these legs when they're born, but they don't all have wings. The Gemara also, and this is the last sort of rule of the Gemara we're going to look at today, says, don't forget the Torah says that there are species. It's not just four locusts. The Torah mentions Arbe, Chagav, Chagol, Salam. But it mentions also Leminehu. Look in number 15. The Gemara says, Ma Talmud Noma, why did the Gemara say Lemino, Leminehu, 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 different species. Dalet Pamim, four times. Lahavi, it includes four other types of locusts which are all kosher. Tziparet Kramim, these little sort of vineyard bird locusts. The Yochana Yerushalmit, this locust called the Yochana Yerushalmit, the Haratsuvia, and this other locust called Haratsuvia, the Arazvanit. Okay? I don't know exactly what they are. Maybe nobody knows exactly what they are, but there is more than one kosher locust. Fine. So eight altogether, four locusts and four species. The good news, of course, is the locusts are parav. So they are not only very nutritious, but they're very versatile. Look in number 16. The Gemara says, based on the Mishnah in Chulin, Kol basar osel levashel b'chalav. You're not allowed to cook meat and milk together. You know that. Mehem midivrei Torah. Sometimes it's a Torah prohibition, such as lamb or beef. Okay. Mehem midivrei sofrim. Sometimes it's a rabbinic prohibition, such as chicken. Chutz mibasar dagim v'chagavim. But fish and locusts are the best of all. She'enam lo midivrei Torah v'lo midivrei sofrim. They are not prohibited on a Torah or a rabbinic level. And therefore, you are allowed to have locusts with milk, you are allowed to have locusts with meat. In this sense, it's even better than fish. Because fish, we have a halacha, we don't eat fish and meat together. But locusts, you can have parav, you can have fleshiks, and you can have milchiks. So there you are, another good reason for eating locusts. What bracha do you make on a locust? The Gemara, the Mishnah discusses this. Number 17. Al elu, oh sorry, before we get to the bracha, excuse me. Locusts are, of course, a plague. They're a curse. And therefore the Mishnah in Tanis says, Al elu matrin b'chol makam. On the following pests, plagues, we have to blow the trumpets, blow the shofars, to warn the people. Remember Yoel, call a fast, bring people together, the old, the young, the chatan, the kala. Al shidafon, if there is a withering of the crops because of the dry weather. Ala yirakon, and if there's a fungus or a rust in the crops. My grapevine got a bad rust this year. It affected the grapes a lot. Listen, I don't really care that much. It's just a thing at the end of my garden. But if you're a vintner, if you're producing crops and they become rotten, it's your whole livelihood gone. Al ha'arbe, on locusts. Al ha'chasil, another kind of locust. Al chayara, on wild animals that invade. Al ha'cherev, and on the sword, on armies that are invading, God forbid. Matrin alea mipnesha hi makam mehalechet. It is a moving plague. Today it's over there, but tomorrow, we said, the wind could change, and the plague will move, and God forbid there should be locusts in the land any time this could turn into a swarm. Look at number 18, Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva omer, arbe chusel, when it comes to locusts, afil ulmai nira be'eret Yisrael ela knaf echot. If you see one locust, presumably in its gregarious phase, if you see one yellow locust that looks nasty, matri malayim, you sound the trumpets immediately. Because if there's one, there could be another 79,999,999 coming very close up behind. And that's not something you want to risk. So okay, so what's the bracha? So based on everything we've said, you're going to ask, well, why would I make a bracha on a locust? I mean, do you make a bracha on a plague? So have a look here in number 19. Says the Gemara in Mishnah in Brachas. Al dava she'ein gidula min ha'aretz. Things that do not grow from the ground. They're not vegetables or fruits, etc. Omer she'hakol. You say the bracha? She'hakol ni'yeh bedvaro. So meat, cheese, fish. These are all things which you say she'hakol. Al ha'chometz, on vinegar. On a fruit that fell off the tree before it was fully ripe, which is not good, but it's edible. Val govai, and on govai, which is locusts, omer shehakol. Oh, so now you know the bracha is shehakol. Rabbi Yehuda says no, absolutely not. Kol shehu min klala ein mevarchin alav. Something which is a curse, how can you make a bracha on? The Mepharshim explained that you would make a shehakol on something else. You can't eat them without a bracha. Obviously, you can't benefit from the world without making a bracha, but you'd make a bracha on something else, and then you'd eat the locusts. But you can't make a bracha on locusts, or on fruit that fell off the trees, it's a curse. Or even on vinegar, it could be your wine went bad, and you lost a fortune of money. We don't paskin like Rabbi Yehuda, we paskin that you make a bracha, and therefore locusts are shehakol nihiyeh bidvaro. Fine, next, shechita. You don't need to shecht a locust, okay? They don't need shechita, the Rambam rules. Gagim, number 20. Gagim v'chagavim, fish and locusts, einun tzrichim shechita, ela asifasan hi hamateret otah. Just gathering them up, you can eat them just through gathering. You catch the fish in a net, you catch the locust, etc. The way that the kids used to catch locusts in Yemen is Rav Kapach, right? They go out early in the morning when the locusts are cold and sitting on the ground before they all take off, and they gather them all in. There was a whole children's subculture of locusts in Yemen. Rav Kapach writes that they used to, when they warmed them up, they used to tie little strings on them. The little kids tie strings on the locusts, and they used to make them fly around like little aeroplanes. That's what they did. You know, what I used to do with conkers, if you're not English again, you don't know what conkers are, but that's okay. What the kids do with the little locusts. So, you gather them in. And says the Rambam an interesting thing. Lefikach, in mesum aleim, if they die on their own, if you find a dead locust, betoch hamayim, or they're in the water, mutar, it's fine. Umutala achlan chayim, you're even allowed to eat them when they're alive. Now, says the Haggai to Maimonides, whoa, wait one second. You can't eat live locusts. Why not? Because there is a mitzvah of bal tashaksu. Gemara explicitly says, eating live creatures is a problem of bal tashaksu, it's disgusting. What does it mean, therefore, when it says you can eat them alive? It means that if you ate them when they were alive, that's not eva min achai. That's not a limb from a live animal, which it would be if it were a bird or an animal of some kind. But you are allowed to eat them. You have to kill them first, but it wouldn't be eva min achai if you ate them alive. Traditionally, they used to boil them. Now you can put them in the freezer, by the way. Apparently that works very well. And I assume that's a sort of a nice, peaceful way for the locust to die. What about Tsar Bali Chaim? Is there a problem of cruelty to animals with locusts? So you should know, Rav Yaakov Emden, we had a series on pets a long time ago. Rav Yaakov Emden writes that there is no Tsar Bali Chaim on animals other than things that human beings used to work with. Cattle, dogs, maybe cats, etc. But on insects, he says there's no Tsar Bali Chaim, even though there is a chumrah of the Arizal that he wouldn't even kill an insect, which is proper. Why should you take a life unnecessarily? Nevertheless, it could be that Tsar Bali Chaim doesn't relate to that. Rav Moshe said maybe don't kill them directly; it's not good for your midot. But Tsar Bali Chaim probably doesn't relate directly. Okay, so now the $64,000 question. Okay, so I've got you all excited about locusts. You want to go out there this afternoon, pick some up, and fry them for dinner. Are you allowed to eat locusts, yes or no? So the Rambam clearly says yes. The Gemara said yes. The Mishnah said yes. The Chumash says yes. And he gives you the eight signs, the eight different kinds of locusts. Look in the Rambam number 22. He gives, Mini Chagavim, Sheitiru, Torah, Shmona. There are eight locusts, and he goes through them. The Chagav and its subspecies, the Arba and its subspecies, the Sal'am and its subspecies, etc. And then he says, number Chafet, Mishahu Baki Bahem Shemoseyem. If you know what you're doing, you know your locusts, so you can eat them. Hatzayid Neim Analeim Ka'if, and you can trust a hunter. If someone tells you they know what they're doing, you can trust them if they are a Baki, if they are an expert. Umisha Eidu Baki Bahem, if you don't know what you're doing, Boidek Besimanim, so check them. Check for the signs. He puts two of the simanim together, and he says basically there are three. Kol sheyesh ba'araglaim, there have to be four legs. Arba knafaim, four wings. Shechofot rov orech gufo v'roch hekef gufo, they cover most of the body. He puts those two signs together. V'yesh lo shnei kara'ayim, and they have these two jumping legs. L'natavehem, harizem min tahor. Then you know the kosher. You just check for the signs. V'afal pishe rosh ha'aroch. It doesn't matter if they have an extended head. Some locusts have a very long head. Doesn't matter. If they have a tail, as long as it's called a chagav, tahor, that's fine. And then he brings the halacha that if they're going to grow them later, then that's also good. So again, just check the species and you're good to go. So why have you and I never eaten locusts, if it's so straightforward? So look at Rashi. Rashi, unfortunately, already puts the damper on things. Number 23. Rashi comes along in France in the 11th century and says, he describes these two legs. He says, Somoch le tzvaro, they're close to the neck. There's a whole discussion as to what does Rashi mean by close to the neck. And he says, when they want to jump around, because he wrote, la'uf, when they want to fly, the likpots minaris and jump from the ground, mitchasek ba'osam shtei kra'ayim, they use those two legs, the porer. The yesh, look what Rashi says carefully here. The yesh harbe mehem b'mekomeinu b'noseim. We have loads of these things around us. We have lots of these locusts or grasshoppers. Ka'aitan shikorim langosta. And he gives the name. Langosta is the Spanish, to this day, is the Spanish name for locust, and is the old French name for locust. But, and here's the big but. Aval. Ein anu bakiyim bahem. But we really don't know what we're doing anymore. Ashkenazim, living in France. We don't know what we're doing. She'arba simani tahara nemru bahem arba raglaim. He goes through the signs. Yes, they have four legs. Arba knafayim, four wings, kasulayim. They have the special legs, okay? Uknafayim chofot et rubo. V'chol simanim halalu mitzuyim ba'osam shebenaseim. And he says, I've looked at the locusts in France, or the grasshoppers. They've got these signs, he says. I know that they've got the signs. Aval yesh she'rosham aruch, but some have a long head. Yesh she'en lahem zanav, some don't have any tails. But tzara she'em shemoch agav. And we don't know which are called chagav. U'bezeh ein anu yodim lahabdil ve'neha. So he says you can't rely on the signs anymore, because don't forget they have to be called chagav. They have to have this name locust and we no longer know which to eat. And therefore, I'm not prepared to eat any of them. And therefore, Rashi puts, it's not just him, but he puts down a mark and he says, Ashkenazim, locusts are off the menu. We just don't know what we're doing. We don't have a masora, and we're not able to eat them. They have to be called certain things, and we just don't know which ones are called which. Because ordinary grasshoppers are not locusts. Now, the Midrash HaGadol, which is a Yemenite source, gives you an interesting clue. You may have thought this was a Bubameister, but it's not. 24. Katuv chet al liboy. There's a little chet written on the belly of the locust. Mitnesha hu chelo shel makom. Because it's part of God's army. And he brings the pasuk in Yoel, Arbe hayelek chazil v'agazem, cheli hagadol asher shilachti b'chem. What's it talking about? So let me, I hope you can see this clearly. Okay, can you see this little fellow here? This picture, can you see the picture? You see that in the middle there, oops, didn't mean to give that line, in the middle there is a chet. I may even be able to, hang on, I may be able to do something to draw here. Oh, look at that for technology. Okay, you see that little chet? Imprinted on the tummy a little bit. I hope you can see it that way. It has a stempel. It has a Hechsher stempel on its own tummy. And this is not just a Mishigas. Says the Midrash HaGadol, this is how you know which are the kosher locusts. And I'll bring you another source here. Rav Shimon Bechol Yaakov. The aforementioned locust has a specific feature on its chest. On some are stamped the letter Chet. And on some are stamped the letter Tet. Those that have the letter Tet, a Tame. Okay, you have to avoid them. Tet for Tame. For they say that this is a feature of impurity, but the letter that has the letter Chet, one can eat them, for they say this indicates that it's called Chagav. Meaning the Torah, the Talmud says it has to be called Chagav. How do I know what it's called Chagav? No problem. God put a Chet on the bottom of the tummy of the locust. It has its own, Hechsher stamped on the belly. And Dr. Zohar Amar, who is one of the world experts on locusts, he wrote one of the key svarim on this, Ha'arbem Masoret Yisrael. He says here, this generally refers to the chet shape, which is found on the upper portion of the locust breastplate, the mesomacosternum, but there is also a similar shape on the lower chest. The chet is like an imprinted letter, is easily and clearly visible, especially in the adolescent phase. The chet can be seen on the locust when one holds it vertically towards the floor, so that when the locust is horizontal, it looks like a chaf. So now you have a chaf as well. If you turn it the other way, you have a chaf for kosher. Some see in this feature a reference to the word kasher. In Yemen, they said the chet means cherem, okay, because they destroy. In Morocco, they said the chet means halal. So now you know, if just next time a grasshopper hops onto your wall, if you're zoche to the Rav Chaim Kanievsky's hashkocha, just pick it up gently, have a look and see if it has a chet stamped on its tummy, but don't eat it. Because if you're an Ashkenazi, you're not allowed to. And the question is, why and how? How did this evolve in this way? So in the last part of the shiur, in the last 10 minutes, I want to try and explain to you how different communities evolved in their own way. The Shulchan Aruch doesn't make any mention, and neither does the Ramah, that the Ashkenazim do not eat locusts. He just brings the Simanim. I'm not going to read them again. We've seen them already a few times. The four different signs, the wings, the legs, etc. And he says it has to be called a locust, and it says they don't eat shechita, and the Ramah never says a word. Doesn't say a thing. Doesn't say we don't eat locusts, although we saw the Ashkenazim clearly already from the early medieval period did not eat locusts. And the Eri in Provence, and I brought you the references in the footnotes, says we don't eat locusts anymore. He's in the 13th century, but the Spanish do, still the Spanish do. Have a look at the Taz. The Taz records the halacha a little bit later for Ashkenazim. Achshav noagim shelo le'echol. Now, look at those words again. Achshav noagim shelo le'echol. What does that mean? We have a minag not to eat them? Or we don't have a minag to eat them? We'll see, that becomes important. Shum chagav, we don't eat any locusts anymore. Afilu biyadu sheshmo chagav, if you know it's called locust, lefisha einanu bakim b'shmoisein. We don't really know which is which. So the Ashkenazim pulled out of the locust eating very early on. The Spanish ate all the way through the Middle Ages in many communities, although it seems that some did not. Some did, some did not. North Africa. Oh, let's get into the Moroccans. The Spanish community moved over to North Africa. I'm sure there are some people on this Zoom today who are from Moroccan or North African extraction. Did the Moroccans eat locusts? And the answer is, yes, they did. They ate them with great gusto all the way through the 15th, 16th, and 17th century. However, one of the key sources here in the mid-18th century, the Or HaChaim on Chumash, Rav Chaim ben Attar, gives the following warning. He says, I'm going to stop all this locust eating in North Africa. Look at what he says on the Chumash, number 29. Yesh minim har bevadai. There are definitely many species that ain't on the tsuim kol ikez, and we just don't know exactly what they are. Ulachem kol yarei v'chared. Okay, Yare the Yifachid, everyone who is scared and fears for not breaking the law, Labal Yoshid Yado Lesheket Zeh. They shouldn't put their hand out to take this. People ate locusts. They were a ready supply of food. Stop it, he said. The Yimcha Basholche Yad, and anyone you see taking them, you must give them Tochacha. They're not allowed to eat them. And then he gives you an interesting observation. This is in the mid-1700s. The Hine Meyon Shenishmu Devarai. From when I made this pronouncement, the Ma'arav, in the Maghreb, in Morocco, upirshu mihem harabim, and people stopped eating locusts. Lo naga Hashem od b'makazov, lo niroze yetem yud bet shana. We haven't had a locust plague for 12 years, he says, since we stopped eating locusts. Ki Torah umasim tovim katris mipnei hapuranos, because Torah and good deeds are a protection from a plague, and therefore he feels that absolutely no way. We don't know what we're doing, and we should not be eating them. There was a lot of opposition, you should know, to Rav Chaim ben Attar in Morocco. The Moroccans were eating some of them locusts all the way up to the 20th century. But gradually, most of the later Meforshim that came down against in the Sephardi world, if you go to the Sephardim today, they will not permit locusts. They will not. They are no more lenient on locusts than the Ashkenazim. However, and they base it on this Or HaChaim. However, in Yemen they do. In Yemen, they had a constant tradition up until the Yemenite community came to Israel in the 1940s, the late 40s. They ate a certain locust, which was the desert locust. And by the way, the Moroccans that ate that locust were generally the Moroccans that lived near the Sahara. The Moroccans were communities near the coast, but they also had communities near the Sahara, and the desert locust was very much part of their culture. But the Yemenites ate the locust called Al-Jarad. They said that was the Arabic name for it. And this indeed is the desert locust, Schizoceca gregaria, if I pronounced it wrong again, please forgive me, which swarms, and therefore the Yemenites, Agayomazer, will eat locusts, because they say that they can identify exactly which are the kosher locusts. Good. So if you're Yemenite, then you're good to go. The question is, final question for today, can you and I, as Ashkenazim and Sephardim, rely on the Yemenite Masorah? If a Yemenite comes for dinner and brings with him a bag of locusts and says, this is what I was going to bring chocolates, but I decided to do something more interesting and I brought locusts. Can I eat those locusts or not? What about if I go to his house? Can I eat them? Because sometimes where they have, Yemenites have different minhagim. For example, Yemenites rely on the Rambam and heat up cold liquids on Shabbos, which the Ashkenazim and the Sephardim will not. So if I go to a Yemenite house, I can eat the soup on Shabbos lunch. He heated up the soup from cold on Shabbos morning. Okay, I wouldn't do that, but he's allowed to do that. He relies on the Rambam. Can I eat the locusts? So Pashtus, the Shulchan Aruch, says no. Have a look in number 30. In Shar Makom She'eim Lahem Mesoras, Yecholim Le'achlam Al Smach Makom She'yesh Lahem Mesoras. He's talking about birds here. Can an area which has no Masorah rely on another area which does have a Masorah? So look at what he says. He says, Shulchan Aruch, Yesh Misha Oiser, one view says no, that's the Rashba. Yesh Misha Matar, one view says yes, that's the Rosh. The Yesh Lachush L'Divrei HaOiser, and I want to go stringently. I want to say no. So if you do not have a tradition, and someone else does, on the issue of the kashrus of birds here, and the same would apply to locusts, you may not eat locusts because even though they assure you that that's kosher, you can't rely on that. Now, it sounds like that's the end of our locust possibilities. But in fact, the Meforshim say not so quick. It may be that there is no real machlokus here. It may be that actually, number one, maybe they're talking about communities. A community can't flip. all the Jews of London can't suddenly say, let's eat locusts. No, it's not your Masorah. You can't do that, but maybe an individual can. And also, critically, and this is the way the Aruch HaShulchan paskens, we'll see in a second, it's talking about someone who has a negative Masorah. Not that we don't know, but we don't eat that. We won't eat that. Our minag is not to eat that, so then you can't switch. But what if you have no Masorah? You're just neutral? Okay, maybe it's okay. Aruch HaShulchan says this about birds. I haven't got time for the whole thing today, but basically he says, in number, let's start a little bit here, number 31. The Aruch HaShulchan lived 100 years ago, 150 years ago. Misha hu b'makom shenagim issa, ba'if. If you're from a place where they won't eat this bird, ba'if echa, mitnei she'ein lahem masoras, you don't have a masorah. V'halach l'makom she'oichlin asa, but you go to visit a place where they do eat that bird. Mitnei she'eish lahem masoras, because they do have a masorah. Yachol hu gam ken la'ach l'sham, you can eat it there too. One second. Didn't we say that you can't? No. Afilu dasa lachzol makami. Even if you intend to go back home, you can still eat the play in the new place. Ein kamishum chumri mokum shiyatzon misham. We don't have to worry that you have to keep the chumras of where you came from. Why? Here's the key. Shehari masha ein oichlem otzol bimkama. Why don't you eat it in your place? Lo mitnei she'omrim shehu asur. Not because you say it's prohibited. Ela shemaydim shehu matar. You say, no, it's probably fine. We don't have that minag. We don't eat it. So he says, as long as you don't have a negative minag, then you can eat. With locusts, however, the Aruch HaShulchan says, Achshav, like the Taz, Ein Nohagim, so Anu Nohagim Shalot Lechol. Shum Chagam. We have a minag not to eat locusts. Afilu B'chol HaSiman, and even if you can find all the signs, Afilu Yadu Shishmo Chagav, even if you know it's called a Chagav, and he says, Umiyamenu loy shamanu sheyehei makom sheochlim bo chagavim. And he said, I've never even heard of a place where Jews eat locusts. I don't think that the Aruch HaShulchan knew many Yemenites, because he was living in Lithuania. But he says, I've never even heard of anyone who eats locusts. So based on that, most of the Ashkenazi and Sephardi Rabbanim that you will ask, if you could eat locusts, will tell you no. They'll say, no, I'm sorry, we have a negative Masorah that we do not eat locusts, and therefore you may not eat locusts. However, Rav Kapach said yes. Rav Kapach said Ashkenazim and Sephardim. Here I've brought you two letters that are quoted from one of Rav Slifkin's websites on this issue. It is clear to me that the lack of tradition amongst Ashkenazim and Sephardim as to their kashrus is not because they had a tradition to prohibit them. He says, no. Rather, they were not found in their countries. Of course you don't know your locus if you come from Manchester. You wouldn't expect to. And therefore they lacked this delicacy. Oh, delicacy. And didn't taste it. It appears to me they can absolutely rely on the testimony of the Yemenite community, for according to the halacha, it suffices that there be a tradition that is kosher and their name is Chagav. So Rav Kapach says, yes, you can absolutely, if you're Ashkenazi, Sephardi, you can eat locusts as long as the Yetzei Mani says that you can. So too Rav Shlomo Korach. Rav Shlomo Korach was the chief rabbi of Bnei Brak. He died a couple of years ago, also from Yemen originally. He says very clearly that you can eat locusts as long as a Yemenite tells you what to do. He disagrees on one point. He says, even though it's not a delicacy. It's okay, a culinary machlokus, whether a locust is or isn't a delicacy. But nevertheless, he says you can definitely rely on it. Rav Zalman Nechemya Goldberg, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, was stringent for Ashkenazim. However, Rav Moshe Sternbuch, I know people who've asked Rav Moshe Sternbuch verbally if you can eat locusts if a Yemenite says they're okay, and he said you can. In writing, it writes that he says you can't, okay? But I know people who've asked him personally who say that you can. Most Ashkenazi and Sephardi kashrus authorities will not allow you to eat locusts. They won't supervise an event at which locusts are served. But if you call the rabbonim on the Beis Din individually and privately and ask them, can I or can't I eat locusts, then you might get a different answer. That's all I'm going to say. I know situations where people have called rabbonim on the Beis Din and been told they can eat locusts, even though the Beis Din say officially that you're not meant to. Perhaps uniquely, I want to give the last word today to Herman Wouk. Herman Wouk, in a book, very important book, This Is My God, seminal book, he writes here, and I'll give him the last word. I recently heard of a Yemenite medical student in a United States university, devoutly Orthodox, who attended a laboratory class where locusts were being dissected. He told the instructor, a Jewish biologist, that the creatures were of an edible variety. He looked at their tummy and saw the
chet on the bottom, probably. And he pointed to a distinguishing mark, the Hebrew letter chet, clearly marked on the insect's abdomen. He proceeded to prove that they were edible and kosher, at least as far as he was concerned, by eating a few little lab treats. I, says Herman Wook, asked the rabbinic authority whether this conduct was acceptable. Perfectly, the answer was. Based on the Talmud rule, he has a continuous tradition from his father. Says Herman Wook, I gathered that if I caught a grasshopper with a chet on its abdomen, it would not be an available morsel for me, since I have no such tradition. And he ends, I submit to this deprivation with fortitude. He's going to live with it. He'll live with the reality that he can't eat his locusts. So, what should you do? I say you should ask a shayla. And depending on who you ask, you may even have locusts for dinner tomorrow night. Hopefully that will give you an understanding of what there is to say, at least some of what there is to say about this. A fairly eclectic range of sources, from the classics to Johnny Morris and even John the Baptist, Lahavdil, Elif Havdolos. But nevertheless, we've seen a lot of interesting things here today. This is all that I have the kayach to say about locusts, and that's all we're going to say on exotic animals. But hopefully this has been illuminating for you. And if you do have any close encounters with locusts over the next few weeks, please drop me a line and let me know. Someone's written Batei Avon. Excellent. Good. Very nice. So I wish that to you as well, Batei Avon. Next week, please God, we'll get into more Tishrei mitzvah issues. But for now, I wish you a good week, a healthy week. Thank you again for the sponsorship. We look forward to seeing you, Be'ezrat Hashem, next week. All the best. All the best. Nice to see you all. Bye-bye.